Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today we are here with Adrienne Lett. She is a Democrat running for House District 114 in the Charleston-Dorchester area. Hi, Adrienne. Thanks for being on Frogmore Stew.
Happy to be here.
Is this your first time running in an election?
First time running for anything.
And what on earth made you want to run for South Carolina State House?
There's a few things that ultimately made me want to run. I've been keeping up with state politics since I moved here in 2021. I moved here right after college. After Roe v. Wade fell, just keeping up with the abortion legislation updates. It's very frustrating as a young woman to see a bunch of mostly older men make all these laws. A decent chunk of it came down to just being frustrated with the people who are currently elected and thinking that we need more women in elected positions and we need more young people in these elected positions. And I figured I can take the charge and do that.
Tell us a little bit about your district. What makes up Charleston-Dorchester District 114?
Mm-hmm. 114 at the southern end. It extends a little bit further south than Bees Ferry. It's a very long and narrow district. It goes just a little bit past the Bees Ferry area, and then it pretty much extends upward along the Ashley River, crossing over the Ashley River in a couple spots in North Charleston, and then up through Somerville, again, on that southern half of Somerville, and then even past that a little bit.
I think in the last election, 2020, the Republican won by 58%. That district had been redistricted after the 2020 census. What is your outlook on moving the needle on that number?
I think that it'll definitely be an uphill battle, but I have recognize that, and that's something that we knew from the start. Everyone's been telling me that. But I think that there have been some kind of hot button issues discussed these last couple years, especially with the incumbents' voting record on some of these issues. I think that bringing those up could convince some people who typically lean Republican or maybe have voted for him in the past to maybe vote for me or some other Democrats instead in other positions.
What kind of legislation has he voted on that you feel like would make a moderate vote the other way?
Mm-hmm. As I already brought up, abortion is a big issue for me. And he voted in favor of the 6-week abortion ban. And for most Democrats, they don't like that. But even some Republicans who think that women should be able to choose what they do with their bodies and what goes on with their bodies, that is one of the big issues that has, in some recent elections, swayed Republicans.
And in your district specific, is there one or two issues that really stand out that you feel like on day one you would focus on when you got to the State House?
I think that there's issues that affect 114 specifically that need to be focused on at the State House, but it's a long haul game for some of those issues, like infrastructure. The incumbent, Gary Brewer, he emphasizes infrastructure as well. But I think infrastructure is one of those nonpartisan issues where everyone says, let's improve the roads, let's update the bridges, let's add more pedestrian access, especially on the narrow bridges where it's just dangerous for there to be cars and pedestrians close to each other. But again, that's more of a long haul process that requires a lot of approvals just to get everything started and get everything rolling. But that is definitely one of the priority issues that specifically affects this district.
From a statewide perspective, what do you think the biggest issue that you would want to be focused on day one when you got there?
I think that education is one of the big issues that needs to be addressed. Again, it affects the entire state. I think that we need to improve the state of our public schools drastically. South Carolina is really falling behind in their education rankings and whatnot, we're one of the lowest states for public education, and we really should not be. And I think that we need to focus more resources on improving our public schools and even just things like paying our teachers more. Everyone says that they support it, but then most of them still don't make a living wage, and they obviously deserve to make a living wage. One of the easiest ways to improve the schools is to improve quality of life for the teachers. They're able to really give their all at their job and give students the education that they need.
And I think I probably know the answer to this from your previous answer, but if you had a magic wand, what is one policy currently in place in the state that you would change immediately?
You know, there's things that you wish that you could change instantly, but sure. It's not just a matter of just changing policy. There has to be a change in policy and then a change in just how we perceive the issue within the state to really make that change that I want to see. But one issue that I think could be solved pretty quickly from just a policy change would be abortion access and just returning to the Roe-era abortion policies that would, you know, just with the policy change, that would pretty much change instantly.
I know you've talked quite a bit about abortion. I think that is a driving factor in voting for many women across the political spectrum in this upcoming election. Do you think that affects how we attract people to come here?
I don't know the source for this, but I've already seen reports where OBGYN, I guess, residents are saying that they're not willing to come to South Carolina and practice in South Carolina because they don't want to be criminalized for doing their job. We have already seen a decrease in the OBGYN residents and physicians who come into this state. And we already have counties that didn't have an OBGYN. We desperately need more OBGYNs within the state, but then these policies are pushing them away. And also, just a lot of women are not willing to move into a state where their lives are in danger because of these laws, potentially, if they are pregnant and they need medical care. We've seen instances where people have unviable pregnancies or they're experiencing a miscarriage, and they are unable to get the care that they need in states that have laws like what we have in South Carolina. There are people who are for sure not willing to move into this state, which could very much be harming our workforce. And even the people who are here, they might not be comfortable with being pregnant in this state. So they might be holding off on becoming pregnant just because of these laws.
What would you want the average voter to know about you if you could talk directly to them?
I guess I would want them to know that I'm not the standard politician. I'm not the standard person who runs for office. I'm 25. I just turned 25 like a week ago. I'm quite young to be running for office. And some people view that as a detriment in terms of experience. But I think that it's one of the big benefits that I have for my campaign, because there are a lot of issues that are predominantly affecting younger people and younger women. But we don't have a voice in the state house. We don't really have someone in the state house advocating for issues that really affect younger people.
Do you think there's anything in your life that has prepared you for this job? Something that you feel like gives you good perspective on representing your district?
I've been following state politics since I moved here about 3 years ago. And since then, I've been quite involved with local politics, especially school board races. I've been very involved with the Charleston County School Board. In terms of my political experience, it's mostly volunteering, staying in touch with local legislators, staying in touch with what's going on at the local level. But I think that experience and forming those relationships has taught me a lot about the inner workings of politics within the state. One of the things that I like bringing up when discussing my age is guns and the prevalence of school shootings in the U.S., currently. And I was born 1999. It was just around the time that school shootings were becoming publicly televised all across the U.S. I really have grown up with school shootings my whole life. And we had lockdown drills all the time. We had school shooting scares a couple times. Even on my college campus in 2017, we had a full campus lockdown, which is extremely rare. But it's something that's become normalized, and it really should not be. With these states passing open carry laws, the quote-unquote constitutional carry laws, it's very disheartening and concerning as someone who's grown up watching school shootings unfold right in front of my eyes. It's not the direction that we want to see the country go in. Unfortunately, a lot of legislators just don't understand that perspective. And I think that's another big issue that is important to have young people in that fight and have a voice in that fight.
You said you've been involved with the school board races, the last school board election. Why did you get involved in that?
I got involved pretty much after that election. Since then, it's become very chaotic. And a large part of that is that a lot of the candidates are somehow involved with Moms for Liberty. That is a big part of why I got involved. I've been very outspoken about my general disapproval of Moms for Liberty. That's no secret. Not just in Charleston, but across the state and across the country. We've seen a lot of the ruckus that they cause, and it's very disheartening. And I know that in Charleston County, teachers who work in neighboring counties, they've been told by their colleagues, like, don't move into Charleston County, don't start working in Charleston County just because of the chaos that the board is causing. And it's not something that teachers want to deal with, and it's not something that they should have to deal with. That is also hurting the workforce, in my opinion. I think we just need school boards to return to what they should be doing, which is focusing on what is best for the students and the teachers and the community.
Let's get into what I've been calling the lightning round. One is you totally disagree with the current or proposed legislation, and 10 is you fully agree with the current legislation or proposed legislation. Number one is the heartbeat bill / 6-week abortion ban.
One.
School vouchers for all.
One.
Open carry.
One.
Transgender care banned for minors.
One.
Critical race theory and the diversity, equity, inclusion legislation that was passed a few years ago, limiting what teachers were able to teach in school.
I think for the critical race theory, I want to say not applicable because it's really not being taught in schools, but definitely should not be banned.
Okay. And how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I have to brush up on exactly how it's done. I have a general idea, but in terms of specifics, I need to definitely learn more.
And the last one is lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I think that the experience of being a lawyer and having knowledge on the law and how it works and going to school for multiple years to specialize in law could be something beneficial to have in processes like that. But I also recognize that legislators who are currently working as lawyers, that could definitely be a conflict of interest. I would like to think that they're all being impartial and just using the knowledge that they learned in law school and through their years of practice to make the best decision. But I also recognize that there could for sure be concerns about the ability to be impartial for instances like this.
All right. Well, we wish you luck.
Today, I'm joined by Spencer Wetmore, the representative for District 115, who is running for re-election. Hey, Spencer. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Glad to be done with session, enjoying a little bit of a break, and glad to be here today.
Well, today we're talking about you going back in the fall. Obviously, District 115, it is getting redistricted.
My district was all of James Island, and then with redistricting, it moved on to Johns Island. Some people call it Lower Johns Island or the rural part. Cardinal directions aren't really my thing. So what I say is when you're heading out towards Wabala, it's everything on the left of Maybank.
So can you talk a little bit about what you did prior to being a state legislator?
Absolutely. I am one of those people who likes to try different things, likes to try different experiences. And so my resume is a little bit varied. I grew up in Charleston, just on the other side of my district over in South Windermere, and left for 10 years, was in law school, just doing the whole spreading my wings thing. But when I got home, I worked for the Charleston County Solicitor's Office. So I was a prosecutor for about four and a half years. Then I made a sharp left turn and went out and worked for the city of Folly Beach as the city manager, city administrator. So I was in charge of writing ordinances and writing the budget. And I would say that was one of the biggest things that prepared me for the state house. We took a really strong environmental stance. We had the first marsh management plan in the state. We did some really interesting work on the beachfront. We have the most restrictive beach setback now in the state. and ended up in some lawsuits about that that I was working on. And then once I ran for office, my husband and I opened our little law practice. So that's my varied resume in a nutshell.
What do you think your district's biggest issue is?
I think all of Charleston's biggest issue is traffic and flooding. So basically infrastructure. And at the end of the day, that is what makes the biggest difference in people's lives. And it's not so much about saving every penny for the sake of saving it. It's about saving every penny so that you can spend it on the things that matter, like roads and bridges and drainage. I think that's probably the biggest number one thing.
Do you think that translates statewide, or do you think there's a different issue statewide?
If you follow the state politics, you'd think that porn in our school libraries was the biggest issue. But I tend to think that it's infrastructure statewide. So what do I know?
I mean, specifically, the upstate doesn't deal with flooding as much. What do you think in terms of infrastructure is their biggest issue?
True. York County and Greenville and Spartanburg, Lancaster, those are some of our fastest growing counties. So even if they're not experiencing the need for, let's say, drainage infrastructure, they absolutely need to be focused on building bridges and sidewalks, stormwater and sewer. So infrastructure, whether they want to admit it or not, needs to be everyone's priority.
So if you're reelected and you have a magic wand, what is the one policy you would change on day one?
Number one policy on day one, I would probably take the budget and increase the amount of money that goes to counties for road construction projects and create a merit-based grant program specifically in the realm of education for school districts to come in and apply for mental health partners or school safety if their risk profile is that they need the new version of metal detectors, which are not actual metal detectors. They're like scanners, or if their risk profile is bulletproof doors, letting them come in and tell us what they think they need in terms of wraparound services and safety. I think those would be the two biggest things I would do on day one if I had a magic wand.
With regards to education, what are some of the things that you want to focus on should you be elected again?
I've always focused on teacher pay. I think if COVID made nothing else clear to us, it should have been how incredibly important our teachers are. All of a sudden, we all had the pleasure of becoming our children's teachers. And let's just say it didn't go well in the Wetmore house. we're not going to do that again. There is a reason that God made teachers and that they have a love for what they do. And we need to treat them as the professionals that they are. So everything from salary to student debt forgiveness to their contracts, that's been a big thing for me this year, is co-sponsoring a bill that allowed teachers to wait until the pay scales come out before they commit to a contract. The same way we would treat any professional in the state, teachers should be at the top of that list.
Back to this infrastructure component, you talked a little about roads and flooding and bridges and sidewalks, which sidewalks are really, I think you know you're getting older when you get excited about things like sidewalks.
the better to birdwatch with.
So
there you go.
When you talk about infrastructure, there's also, I think, state highways. I think one of the things that people are frustrated about is what South Carolina is going to be in 20 to 30 years, 26, for instance. Why is it so difficult to look so far in the future as a legislator?
Money. For at least the 40 years that I know of, we chronically defunded the government as a political talking point. We kept honestly telling people that with more efficiency and more cuts, we could somehow have lower taxes and more government. And it just doesn't work that way. The gas tax, maybe 7-8 years ago, they finally raised it to be even what it is now. And there's just not enough money. And I think the winning formula and the combination for success is for our local governments to plan a project, use their money to design, engineer, and permit a project. And then for us to plan ahead in the state and fund the actual capital investment, you know, the actual construction costs. But there's no magic formula. There's no magic wand, unfortunately. Yeah. Part of the problem is making sure that we have enough contractors. There are entire projects right now in Charleston County where no one bids on them. And so your question about the magic wand implies that I could also have workforce development and everything else. But it is something that we just have to continue fighting at every single day and building up. We can't lose sight of that priority.
South Carolina has really done well attracting manufacturing jobs, but maybe less so with gray and white collar jobs.
I think that will come and that will follow. But at the end of the day, I think South Carolina is only ready for what our education system is ready for. And so when I talk with some of these big corporations and ask them what they need, they say that they need us to focus on education. And I just think that those jobs will come. I think we have a burgeoning tech sector here in Charleston. I think you're seeing a lot more of that type of job come up into Greenville following BMW. You see a lot more logistics managers and logistics companies following the port and Greenville and now the inland port. So I do think that they come, but I don't know that there's anything that we can or should be doing to incentivize or force it. I think we've got to stay focused on the basics, which, like I said at the top, education and infrastructure.
We're going to move into a lightning round on these hot button issues. It's a 1 to 10 scale. 1 will be you totally disagree, and 10 is if you fully agree with either current legislation or what was proposed during the last legislative session.
All right, buckle up for some ones.
Okay, what about the legalization of marijuana?
I'm probably a 7 on that. I definitely think it needs to be regulated from everything from the appearance of stores to the safety, but I'm probably a 7 on that concept.
Heartbeat bill or 6-week abortion ban?
1.
School vouchers for all.
For all, 1. We had a limited bill that I could have gotten. It might have been a 3 or a 4 on, but that school vouchers for all, we're basically just putting money in pockets that we're already paying for private schools. You don't actually pay for schools on your primary residence. The majority of it comes out of 6% and businesses. So that one's tough for me. If we're going to do it, it's got to be on a super income restricted way or really focusing on students with special needs and disabilities.
Open carry.
I don't know, like a 2 or 3. Permitless carry is closer to a 1 for me.
You're the first person I've talked to that's made that distinction. How about the transgender care ban for minors?
I'll give that one a 3. I don't think we should be doing surgery. We weren't anyway. They intentionally use words like mutilation and disfigurement because they sound scary and that's their goal, is to sell fear. I'm not a total 1 on that one, but I do think, especially the kids who were already on hormone treatment to continue, I just think it's cruel to rip that out from underneath families. But in general, I tend to side with there's no room for the government in the doctor's waiting room.
Yep. What about critical race theory in schools?
Like a 1. It's nonsense. Like, I don't know. These are the kinds of issues we spend all of our time and energy on instead of our schools and our roads. It's just ridiculous.
How about term limits for state house and state senate?
Probably a 3 or 4. I do think there's some value in that. But I also think, take Jim Clyburn as an example of somebody who, through seniority, has been able to do an incredible amount for his community. I do think there's some value in sort of turnover generally and fresh perspectives, but I wouldn't support forced term limits.
What about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives?
This is a very worthy and important goal, and to make it the boogeyman is just, again, fear sells. I get it, but it's hurting real people and it's ridiculous.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
This is one where I also think fear sells. I think that there was a certain segment of people, notably the person who may run for governor, advocating that the governor should have more appointees. But that being said, the system we had certainly had room for improvement. I think the term limits are probably the most important improvement. They allow the judge's term is 6 years, and both the House and the Senate versions of the bill say that a Judicial Merit Selection Committee member's term is only 4 years. So in other words, a judge never sees the same committee twice. That was the biggest argument, was that influence. And I think through term limits, through screening all the judges out, we've addressed that. But what we have is a hell of a lot better than public elections where you're introducing money. I also opposed the governor having the appointments, because what do we want? The federal system where you have Obama and Trump judges, except in this case, they would just all be Trump judges. No, that's a no for me. But I think there was some room for improvement. And I think we made some pretty good improvements and some pretty good strides. But in general, I think it was an inside baseball attempt to gain more power for the executive branch, not necessarily like a selfless reform call.
So what about lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
Listen, when you take the home builders off the home builders committee and the realtors off the realtor committee, then we'll talk. But until then, don't tell me that the lawyers who practice every day in these courtrooms aren't qualified to tell you when a judge doesn't understand the law or has the wrong demeanor. It's ridiculous. I'm not saying they need to be the whole committee, but they absolutely have a role on there, and it would be absurd to take them off.
Final question. Talking to your voters in your district, what do you want the average voter to know about you?
Honestly, I think of myself as a lot like my constituents. I want more sidewalks for my kids. I don't want to sit in traffic on the way home. I want clean water. I don't want as much flooding. I want my daughter's schools to be good. I drive the same roads. We go to the same schools. I think probably my biggest block of voters or supporters are young families like mine, and I just want them to know that I'm fighting for them and hoping to be their voice again starting in January.
Today, I'm with James Teeple. He is running for House District 116. James, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Can you tell us where your district is?
It's part of Johns Island, all of Wadmalaw. It's Edisto Island, and the Colleton County piece is Edisto Beach. It's just a little bit of Colleton County, and that includes Hollywood, Ravenel, part of West Ashley, but that's the area.
It's low country, basically down here.
It is.
Low country.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what prompted you to decide to run for House?
I had heard Matt Lieber say that he was going to run for that Senate seat, and I was looking around of who's going to run for the House, and I didn't really see anybody stepping up, really. It was one of those things where I felt like I had a duty to raise my hand and stand up for that and really just stand up for the values that I believe in. And I believe strongly in them. And I feel like my values are low country values and American values. I had to throw my hat in there, and no one else ended up registering or running against me in a primary. I become the Republican nominee for that seat, and I'm super proud and humbled and excited to take that on.
What do you feel like has prepared you for the job of being a House rep?
After I graduated from high school, I went in the Navy and did one stint there. And then I wanted to go to college and further my education. So I got out, went to Missouri State University, got my undergrad degree in business. And I've led a lot of large teams. I was a store manager for Target. I was a general manager for Lowe's. And I had to move up here from Bluffton. And I was looking around for childcare for my kids. And as you know, there's a childcare crisis pretty much everywhere in the country. And I would walk into a place and think, that's not a place where I would want my kids to go. I literally called my wife and said, hey, I'm not finding childcare for our kids. We're going to open one. She thought I was crazy at first, but then when I do something, I jump in with both feet. And we had our doors open from the light bulb idea to doors open in 6 months in the middle of COVID.
Oh, my
Excuse
word.
Me. And we created a lot of good paying full-time jobs right there. We pay in the top 10% in the state. We teach Christian values. Once kids hit 2K, they say the Pledge of Allegiance in our schools, and we teach biblical values. And that one went well. We decided to open a second one. We built the building and have been open for just a few months now. And that one's 75% full. And we take care of about 300 children in the Lowcountry. And making sure that they have the values and morals instilled in them when they go to kindergarten for them to be good humans. And that's our ultimate goal. And when it comes to being involved, I've coached every pitch and every game my son's ever played in Little League. I'm on the school improvement council. I chair that for our local elementary school to try to improve the quality of education for our kids. Yeah. And I volunteer on the search and rescue team for Charleston County. In fact, in 2022, I was given their Lifesaver of the Year award for saving a man's life on Johns Island. And I'm always looking for ways to help, and I want to be an advocate for our community.
What do you think is the number one issue that you are caring about right now?
The biggest elephant in the room is infrastructure, right? And about 30 years ago, they moved the power to dictate projects from the state legislature over to an infrastructure bank, right? And since then, we've had very little transparency in where our tax dollars are going. And we have had this explosive growth on all of the sea islands, really. And infrastructure's not kept up with it. What I would like to do with that to improve infrastructure is we need an audit, a transparent audit of the SEDOT and the infrastructure bank, and find out if we're getting the investment we deserve. Now, we all know we're not, because we all sit in traffic for 45 minutes to try to get off the islands on two ways off on John's Island. Same for Wadmalone. And if anybody that goes through Maine and 17, they feel that pain too. We got to figure out where we're at. And then we need to know where our county and city tax dollars are going to. I think it was 2016, if I remember right. They had a vote for a 1 cent tax for infrastructure. And if you look around since then, there's been no improvements. Where has that money gone? And now they're asking for an additional 1 cent tax increase. But the trust isn't there. The people aren't going to vote for that until they have that trust. And that trust can be built through transparency. And then we can see the path forward of whether it is put that back in the hands of the state legislature, or do we need to reorganize how those projects are allocated? It's not sustainable. But it really comes down to this municipal malpractice that these leaders of the past have done. Everyone deserves that when they're paying for years and years and have paid extra to get that infrastructure and it hasn't been delivered. That's not okay. Yeah. We've got to find that out and figure out what the path forward is for that.
Do you feel like that is the same number one issue statewide, or do you feel like there's a different issue statewide?
There's a lot of issues when you start expanding that map and you look at what people care about. Another one that I hear a lot is the flood of fentanyl that our open borders have caused. I'm on the search and rescue team, and we also do transport for bodies for the coroner. And we've had four in a day of overdose deaths in Charleston County. Mm. You know, my son is about to start middle school. That's when a lot of those kids get exposed to things. And it scares me to death. We need harsher penalties for fentanyl traffickers and human traffickers in our state. We can do more to combat that. Now, we can't go down and fix our southern border. That's a federal government issue. They need to work on that. But we can sure make sure that people that are trafficking that think twice about doing it in South Carolina.
From like a structural standpoint or a system standpoint, is there something else or another way that you would look at how to stop it at the beginning?
Obviously, we can educate the public more. We can offer programs for those who are dealing with addiction, especially opioid addiction. And it's a crisis sometimes that is self-created, right? You go in and you have a knee surgery or an operation and you have painkillers prescribed to you. And you start taking them. You've never done illegal drugs in your life, but you get hooked on painkillers. And there needs to be resources to help people get off the painkillers to where they're not running out of that prescription, looking on the internet, finding what they believe to be additional painkillers, and what they find online happens to include fentanyl, and they're dying. And we see that too. It's not that you're going to all of these calls for overdoses and it's some career criminal he's been on drugs his whole life or her whole life. Sometimes it's not that at all. It's good people getting caught up in this mess of prescription painkillers. And we need to have a place that they can go or a number that they can contact where they can get the resources to get off of that stuff safely. They're not just left to their own devices on that. And that happens a lot. And I feel like 90% of it could be stopped if we would just take care of the southern border issue. But that's where we're at. And I think that's probably the best path forward. But I'm not saying somebody is taking fentanyl because of that and they should be thrown in jail forever. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is those that are trafficking it, working with the cartels and bringing that here, those are the ones that need to just no longer be a part of our society.
Well, let's lighten this up a little bit. I feel like we've gone down the rabbit hole of disaster. If we were to interview your best friend from high school, what is one funny story they would tell us about you?
Oh my goodness. I would hope they wouldn't. No. Then I probably shouldn't ever enter a rodeo. When I was younger, we had a rodeo in our town. And I thought, well, I'm going to enter this thing. And I entered in the bareback bronc riding event. I ended up falling off, obviously. And I fell off the wrong way and my hand got stuck in the handle. And that horse beat me senseless before I could get my hand out of that handhold. I actually ended up breaking my leg. I had three screws put in after, but I never did that again. But I'm a prime example of just because you see it done does not mean at all that you should do it.
All right. This is where you stand on some hot button issues from a range of 1 to 10. If 1 is you totally disagree with the legislation that's either current or close to passing, and 10 is you fully agree with the current legislation in place or proposed. Number one is medical marijuana.
Completely depends on the wordage of the bill. Right now, I'm a 5.
Lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I'm not a fan of that. I would say 1.
The diversity, equity, inclusion, / what's been called critical race theory in schools, the bill that passed, I think it was last year.
I agree that it should be limited. In and of itself, it ends up being not inclusive and not promoting diversity.
A heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
I would say 5. Oof, 6 weeks is pretty early. I would say 5.
School vouchers for all.
Yes, 100% agree.
Constitutional carry.
That is a right guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. We don't need a permission slip. I agree that we should have it.
And transgender care banned for minors.
For minors, absolutely agree it should be banned.
You did it. Really appreciate
there you
being
go.
On Frogmore Stew. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal
prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.